Our presentation, our first presentation this morning is on public records laws and rules for legislators. Our presenters are Amber Hardesty from LSC, who is the division chief from our group that deals with public records law. Going down the line from the Senate, Frank Strigari, who's the chief legal counsel in the Senate, and Michael Lenzo, who was with Kim Flasher's group. You saw him back on Tuesday, who also is the chief legal counsel for the House. And then they both work with the Republican caucuses. The Democratic caucuses have their chief legal counsels too. And I see Sarah Cherry for the House Democrats back there is also here this morning, observing back there. So, and available for your questions too, especially you in that caucus, who will be in that caucus. So I'll turn it over to Amber Hardesty now.
Good morning, can everybody hear me? Okay. As Mark mentioned, I'm Amber Hardesty, State and Local Government Division Chief at the Ohio Legislative Service Commission, and the areas I work in include areas related to the General Assembly and public records law. I've been asked today to provide you with a general overview and a brief introduction of the public records law, especially as it will impact you as members of the legislature. I will then Mark already introduced them, but I'll then turn it over to Frank and Michael from the House and Senate majority caucuses, and they can hopefully give a more hands-on approach of the public records requests and what you might expect to see in your office. And finally, we'll open the discussion to questions and hopefully be able to resolve any issues you might have. As you might know, Ohio has a long history of encouraging openness in government. The Ohio Constitution, for example, even specifies that proceedings of both houses shall be public, except in cases which, in the opinion of two-thirds of those present, require secrecy. Based on that general principle of public access, General Assembly sessions and committee hearings are open to the public. Similarly, a long tradition exists encouraging government records to be open to the public. Former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis wrote back in 1913 that publicity is justly commended as a remedy for social and industrial diseases. Sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants, electric light the most efficient policeman. He believed that making government records open to the public reduced the opportunities for corruption and abuse. The tradition has been continued in both the common law, which is court cases, and in statute. So Ohio law encourages government documents to be publicly available in section 149.43 of the revised code, which is referred to as the public records law. It generally requires all public records to be promptly prepared and made available for inspection to any person at all reasonable times during regular business hours. And it requires copies of records to be made available at cost within a reasonable period of time. Okay, so you have to provide copies of public records. The question then becomes, what is a record? It might be more than you think. According to the official definition, a record is: 1, any document, device, item, regardless of physical form or characteristic, which includes an electronic record, so it can be email, that is created, received, or comes under the jurisdiction of any public office of the state or its political subdivisions. And 2, it has to document the organization, functions, policies, decisions, procedures, operations, or other activities of the office. So it's not just something you create, it can be something sent in by a constituent who you work with. It can be a date book or other documents that are used within the office. But personal items that do not document functions or activities of the office are not subject to the law. So you get a note from your spouse or a personal email, a schedule of your child's baseball games, you brought your electric bill into mail. These aren't going to be subject to the public records law because they don't document the functions of your office. Even if someone requests them, you're not going to be obligated to produce those. However, if it documents the organization's functions, policies, or decisions of your office, that will be a record. It could be your computerized schedule, an email, handwritten notes, or formal written communications such as letters or memos. Because these items are records under the law, they generally are going to be required to be produced upon request unless there is a specific exemption that applies. There are a number of exemptions in the public records law. However, something to keep in mind is that the public records law is to be liberally construed and the exceptions strictly construed. That means that the courts, when interpreting the law, should favor openness. You may be familiar with some public records law exceptions just in your daily life. Medical records or your social security number, law enforcement records are not things that need to be produced. However, most of those aren't going to come up day to day in the General Assembly. But there is one significant exemption that will apply directly to all of you: the confidentiality of certain legislative documents. Section 101.30 of the revised code creates a confidential relationship between legislative staff and members and staff of the Ohio General Assembly. So legislative documents arising out of that confidential relationship are not subject to the public records law. Once you've taken your oath of office in January to become members of the General Assembly, any communications that you or your staff has with the Ohio Legislative Service Commission or any other legislative agency in our budget group will become confidential. That means that if you request a bill draft, research memorandum, or other documents from our office and we provide those to you, or any communications relating to those documents, they will remain confidential. You can feel free to discuss ideas, request research, propose bill and resolution drafts without worrying about whether or not those will become subject to public scrutiny. Now, some of those documents will become eventually public, and largely you're going to be in charge of that. For example, if you decide to have a bill drafted and want to introduce it for consideration, it will then become a matter of public record. When that bill is analyzed by LSC, the analysis of that bill will become a public document once it's been presented to the Legislative Committee or House considering the bill. And if you have an amendment you want to consider, even if you're not necessarily going to introduce it to in committee or on the floor, it's your choice whether or not to release those documents to the public. But the communications that you have with LSC are confidential and we won't be releasing them. It gives you the freedom to conduct research and explore policies and legislation without concern that your ideas are going to be released to the public. The other question is, what happens when you receive a public records request? I think Frank and Michael will probably go more into the details of that, but just some general overview. Even if the request is for a confidential document, you can't just ignore it. You can't just say, look, I got an email, they want a public record, it's a bill draft request, I don't have to give it to them. That's true, you don't have to, but you do have to tell them that. The law does not permit you to ask who it is. So if somebody calls and says, hi, I'm Amber, can you email this public record to some general email account? You can't say, Amber, is this, what's your last name? Is this for the media? Are you gonna put this in the newspaper? You can't ask any of that. But you have to, within a reasonable period of time, give them the document or explain why it's confidential. Even if the document falls under an exemption, the public office has the burden of proving that the record is exempt. And if the record contains some information that is exempt, the public office must redact the exempt information and make available all of the remaining information. With that, I'm going to open it up to discussion with the Senate and House majority legal counsels, and we'll be hopefully able to answer your questions at the end. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Frank Strigari. As the director told you, I'm the legal counsel for the Senate. My, excuse me, I'm a little sick, so just trying to get over congestion. My counterpart in the Senate is Bethany Sanders, who is the legal counsel for the Democratic Caucus. I'm the counsel for the Republican Caucus, but I do oversee legal matters for the general administrative issues that apply to the Senate overall, too. As Amber was describing, the main points to know with all of this is that public records the sole basis of public records is statutory. It's not constitutional. So the law has been developed, rewritten, changed. It's gone in various permutations over time that to address certain issues that come up. And so, therefore, it's been interpreted in a lot of different fashion. But as Amber was describing, it is definitely considered to be construed very liberally. So what we always will suggest is providing public records. Now, probably the main one that you will typically deal with is the exception that Amber was referring to, which is the legislative confidentiality statute that you all will have and your staff will have with LSC, which is very important to note because that is something that protects you as members to explore ideas, do things that you would ask questions, do things that you're thinking about in a private manner. Now, the point where that starts getting there'd be some questions too is when you start distributing stuff to other people. And as that happens, and as public records requests might come in about documents related to that, when you speak with your respective caucus councils, they'll be able to walk you through, well, did you give it to a lobbyist? Well, if you gave it to a lobbyist, then it's going to be a public record. Did you give it to somebody in your office? Well, then that's not going to be a public record. So depending upon the various factual scenarios that apply to legislation that you will be working on will depend upon whether or not it's a public record. So as we go through this, as Mike and I, of course, continue to talk, like, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions, so we'll try to, like, you know, not go into too much detail about stuff and provide an open forum because I know people tend to usually have a lot of questions about this stuff. So, let's see. The one thing too to also note as well, which I'm sure you're probably being told, which you've probably been told already, is that when you're dealing with communications with LSC, when you get a public records request that comes in, don't contact LSC to say, "Hey, is this a public record?" Because they're not going to tell you, okay? Because that's not their job. It's the caucus council's job to say, okay, that communication you had with Amber, that is a public record, or that's not a public record because it falls within the exception. So just make sure you know those distinctions, which you'll learn very easily. One of the also foundational points for which you'll deal with public records is what are called records retention schedules as well, too. And we in the Senate do a little differently than the House does, but all 33 of our members actually have their own separate records retention schedule. Now, 100% of them are the exact same as everybody else's. Usually they are. But each member does adopt their own records retention schedule. But the most important thing to note about that is that's going to govern effectively what you can do with documents over time. Like there's, for example, you know, there's... when it comes to a bill that you may be working on next General Assembly, the records retention schedule in effect for the members of the Senate is that you have to keep all of those records during the 132nd General Assembly and the following General Assembly. So you effectively would have to keep them for at max a total of 4 years. After that time period, you can then destroy them, keep them, you can do whatever you want to do with them. If you keep them going forward, just know there's going to continue to be subject to public records requests. But the records retention schedule is a very important thing that you guys will probably all have to establish and think about, or at least know from the House's perspective what the records retention schedule actually is, so that you know what to do with your records that you maintain and what your staff is going to maintain for you as well, too. So that's a very important component of public records. I will turn it over to Mike to continue the conversation.
Thanks, Frank. I'm Michael Lenzo. I am the chief counsel for the House Republican Caucus, also the chief counsel for the House, as Frank is for the Senate, for overall administrative matters for the agency. My counterpart for the House Democratic Caucus, Sarah Cherry, is observing here in the back, work with Sarah on a lot of issues, and she will be the counsel for the House Democratic Caucus members here. And something Frank and I probably should have mentioned from the beginning for all the new members is for all the caucus legal counsels, there is a special caucus legal counsel statute. And it gives attorney-client privilege and all the other common law privileges like attorney work product. It specifically says that we hold those privileges, those confidential relationships with members and employees of the same caucus. There's a long history for why there's an actual specific statute for us, but. Needless to say, when you're talking with us about legal matters in connection with your official position, we have attorney-client privilege. You know, what you say to us is confidential. If you send us an email relating to legal issues, it is not public record and, of course, does not get divulged unless you choose to waive the privilege, which I recommend you never do that. But, as Frank mentioned, unlike the Senate, the Ohio House of Representatives for all 99 offices has one single records retention schedule for all the incoming representatives elect. This public records schedule does govern all of your offices, breaks it down, breaks all the different kinds of records you can get into 23 different categories, and says how long you're allowed to keep them. Most of them you'll be able to keep for your term of office, your two-year term. Some of them you'll be able to destroy at will when they are no longer of administrative value, but for the most part you are required to maintain them for the two-year term of office. But talking a little bit more about the legislative confidentiality privilege, the statute itself says that a bill draft or an amendment draft or a legislative research report that LSC compiles for you is not public record unless the bill or amendment is introduced, you know, offered or introduced, or if you share it with a member of the public. And the public is not defined in the statute, and there has never been a court case or attorney general's opinion about what the public means. So everyone's pretty much taken a pretty expansive view of that over the years. Pretty much the interpretation has been that it is sharing it with somebody who is not a member of a government agency. So in the past, members of all four caucuses in both chambers have shared various bill drafts and amendment drafts with, you know, other state agencies, with local government agencies, even with federal government agencies, and, you know, have basically chosen to interpret that as being not then blowing the privilege and making it subject to a public records request. But as soon as you start sharing a draft with somebody who is not affiliated with a government agency, let's say a lobbyist or a constituent, you know, we have always taken the point of view that that does blow the privilege at that point, and that that is requestable even if the bill or the amendment has not been introduced. So just be aware and be thoughtful and careful. You'll be working with a lot of third parties and outside interest groups when you're drafting legislation. Be careful when you want to actually share the draft, to, you know, going into it knowing that you are then waiving that confidentiality privilege and it will be subject to a public records request.
The one thing that I think would maybe be helpful too is just to help explain the process of what happens when a public records request comes in the door. I'm sure we probably have effectively the same process, but in the Senate, let's say that a constituent or a news organization, whoever it may be, emails your office and says, you know, I would like to get a copy of, you know, the senator / representative's respective files for Senate Bill, you know, 355 or whatever it may be. What we always, of course, will advise, which of course I think everybody typically does, is whenever you get a public records request, have your staff or you call caucus counsel, your respective caucus counsel, to say, hey, I got a public records request. What do I need to do? Typically, from there, the caucus counsel will sort of take over the matter so that you don't have to really be worried about it very much, and we'll typically work with your staff to figure out what type of records exist, what needs to be turned over, and if there's any questions about records that we may have about who you turned them over to, what they are, and all that kind of stuff, we'll then probably circle back with you. And then we will work with your office, and most likely the council will respond on your behalf to whoever's requesting, providing documents or explaining to them why the documents are not public and therefore are going to be withheld. Mike, is there any part of that process that you think that's helpful?
So, and to, pardon me, to provide reassurance for House Democratic Caucus members, whenever we get a public records request that asks for records from members of the House Democratic Caucus, we forward it to Sarah, and she fulfills that request. There have been many times where we have had records requests directed to the House Administrative Office asking for emails or other internal documents from House Democratic Caucus members' computer systems and asking us to bypass their offices and ask for these things directly. We don't do that. That's not how we do things at the House. We always forward that to Sarah and let her fulfill that request for her members. We never go and, you know, go into the computer systems or do any of those records requests on our own. Always process through her.
Same thing for the Senate. We do the exact same process. So hopefully that explains a little bit for you. I mean, don't be concerned about the public records requests that come in. I mean, the House, because they have three times as many members as we do, typically gets more requests than the Senate usually does. So they have a little, typically more staff who are more trained and well-versed to deal with it. But the Senate does also get, you know, its respective amount of public records requests. So just because you get a public records request, you know, don't feel like there's anything wrong. Just, you know, let your respective caucus council know so that we can handle it for you and then take it from there. So
one thing I'll mention, and this is a question that always comes out up for both new incoming members and existing members, is the interaction between the medium that you're using, particularly for email, whether or not you're using your government email address, your Ohio House or Ohio Senate email address to conduct government business versus your personal email address. Let's say you have a Hotmail or a Gmail account or something along those lines. First thing I'll mention is that Ohio's public records law is one of the most open and transparent laws in the country. You know, for example, at the federal level, FOIA does not apply to Congress. None of their emails, nothing, none of their records at all are subject to any type of disclosure. There are several state legislatures in our area, for example, Tennessee, where there is nothing, not a single document that is public record there. Until recently, Michigan was the same. So, you know, we are an outlier, actually, in how transparent the legislature's records are. Pretty much almost anything you're going to put down in writing about government business, whether it's in paper format or electronic format, is likely going to be a public record. And so I always like to say, to use the newspaper test. Are you okay with what you're putting down in writing, being on the front page of your local newspaper tomorrow? Even things that you put down in a well-meaning way can be sometimes twisted and viewed in a negative manner. So I always caution to be thoughtful and careful before you put anything down in writing, particularly in emails. But the Ohio Supreme Court has never directly ruled whether or not government business that is conducted using a personal email address, a Gmail or a Hotmail account, a private email address, whether or not that is public record. But in the one of the cases that came close to it in dicta, they strongly suggested that it was a public record. And so I think if they ever got a case that was directly on point, they would definitely say that it is a public record. And so I caution all of the members to use their government email to conduct government business, especially after this last election cycle. I think using a personal email address to conduct government business is fraught with peril, and I would recommend you to use your Ohio House or Ohio Senate email address when you're conducting government business.
Yeah, and I we do the exact same thing in the Senate. We obviously advise them that, you know, if you're going to use your Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo account to conduct business, which there are members who do that, there's no doubt about that, just always assume that is going to be a public record. Now, you will, when you rejoin your respective caucuses, I'm sure you might talk to some folks and some of your colleagues who probably tend to have a different opinion sometimes. And I'll tell you that there's a couple members of our caucus who think that that's not a correct interpretation of the law, and these are lawyers too. And that's fair. I mean, but like Mike said, there's never been a specific case that has actually concluded that. So given that fact, we would always tell people, do you want to be the test case or not? So if you don't want to be the test case, just assume that your outside accounts are, in fact, public records. And, you know, for various reasons, that issue's never come up in the court. But like Mike said, the Supreme Court probably over 10 years ago or so.
And the Ohio House was
15
was the
years
test,
ago? Whatever
yeah,
was
the test case for that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Some, for someone who's now a senator. So it's been a while back. But, yeah, that a long time ago, there was an the court was waving a flag at us. At everybody in government, but it never specifically concluded it, though. So just know that you'll have probably different conversations with different people about it, but it's just, as I said, do you want to be a test case or do you not want to be a test case? So,
text messages are likely public records. Again, the court's never directly ruled. In the House's records retention schedule, at the request of a number of our members, we have said that text messages are transient documents so that they can be destroyed whenever you wish, when they are no longer of administrative value. Take that as you will for how you want to maintain your records, but just be aware that we do get requests at the House on a pretty regular basis for text messages. So,
and that is another issue that has a different, has a couple varying different opinions. And I would think, you know, Mike and I have talked about this before, and I do think that to some degree we have a slight different of opinion about that. But we do consider them effectively to be transient in nature too, which means that you can get rid of them at will. But whether or not you don't get rid of them and somebody asks for them, that's where you'll start to get a difference of opinions on things. But it's never been tested in court. So, you know, that's, again, you may potentially an issue where you say, should I be the test case for that as well, too? So, but, you know, you can have more of an in-depth conversation with the respective caucus counsel about that if you have, like, more questions. So I think there was a question, which maybe means, you know, there was a good way to kick it off and open up the conversation, anything that anybody may have questions about.
So Representative-elect Wiggum asked whether or not under the House's records retention schedule, they're considered transient. Can they be deleted on a regular basis? You know, is that a considered a best practice? I would say on a pretty regular basis, there are a number of members that when those texts are no longer of administrative value, they choose to dispose of them. Some do it when they're finished working on a bill or finished working with a third party or something along those lines. Some do it on a daily basis. You know, the records retention schedule at the House allows you to choose what your disposal of that's going to be, you know, when it's no longer a value to your office.
And I'll just quick follow-up too. You know, the majority of at least the categories on your records retention schedule that in the Senate that are listed are fall into that category of being of administrative value, which means they're transient, which means you can dispose of them, you know, whenever it's convenient. Like, I know, like myself, I'm a very bad person at just keeping all of my emails, for example, and I never really periodically go through it and just get rid of it. But, like, probably, you know, over 50% of the emails I have in my email box are most likely emails that could get, you know, disposed of immediately. So it's just a good practice to just keep up the speed on that type of issue and your staff, too, because your records are just going to accumulate at a rapid, rapid pace. So,
Representative? I don't believe it is, and we've fulfilled those requests before.
That's a great question. A great question, because the document itself that you sent over there would be protected under the way that it's historically been interpreted. But the communication itself that they might respond back with is probably likely not protected.
Correct. So the public records law says that personal notes, and it doesn't matter which format they're in, they can be handwritten, they could be electronic, that personal notes that are solely for your personal use are not public record. However, there are cases that say that if those notes are then used later on in some way by another person, then they become public record. So for example, there's a case where someone took notes and then gave them to their staffer to type them up. This was a county commissioner, I believe, gave them to their staffer to type them up, and then the staffer gave the notes back to the elected official. The case did show that became public record at that point because it was shared with another person. I would argue that's not public record. That's another way of having a personal note. That would be my argument.
I would agree with that too.
Yeah. Representative.
When we get 10 emails a day, we want to get rid of them, we delete them, it goes into that extra folder where it says delete is not. Mm-hmm. We just don't need to get the delete button on that. I mean, if we just keep them in the deleted folder, we're saving them, correct? And retaining them.
Well, there, part of the public record statute does mandate that every public office must keep their records in an organizable fashion so they can be searched. Now, I would make an argument that, you know, when you do most searches for emails, you're searching through keywords and things like that, so that, you know, regardless of where you're shuffling them, you can still search and find them. But that was to be, that was actually to prevent, you know, there was apparently a big scandal years ago where an office kept their paper files in a totally disorganized way intentionally so that they couldn't fulfill requests. And they said, sorry, we can't find anything. And so the legislature, when they did public records law revision, they said each public office must keep their records in an organized way so it can actually be searched and you can't actually fulfill requests. So, you know, I don't know if you want to do that just because, you know, your office may want to go back through and actually find things, and it's not going to prohibit a public records request from coming in and asking for something on a topic, because it's very easy in Outlook to do keyword searches and find everything. So,
and I think, and more specifically to what you're, at least I heard you were asking, yes, when you delete, when you press the delete in your Outlook, it goes into the trash bin or the deleted items bin or whatever it's called. It's going to sit there. It's just going to sit there unless you do anything about it. So you can always go back and get that, which would mean then probably if it was requested, you would have to turn it over, assuming it's a public record, because just because you moved it into that folder doesn't mean that it's actually gone. That's why the IT folks will be able to tell you a little bit more about how long, you know, they keep their tapes on everything, but you probably should go through your trash bin and actually remove those files as well, too, like, you know, periodically, because that also builds up very rapidly, too, that mm-hmm. folder.
Yep. Yes, sir?
How about just a constituent sending a message on Facebook or social media, Twitter, whatever? How does that play? Can you speak on that?
So another
great question.
Yeah, the law's a little undefined there as well, but if they're talking about, again, government business, you know, they're contacting you about legislation or a constituent issue, depending what category of record, at least for the House, that fits into, you may be mandated to maintain that record for a set time period. There's probably an open question about whether you need to take steps to maintain a copy of that record in your office, such as printing it out or, you know, copying and pasting that to an email that you forward to yourself or something along those lines. I know there are some members of the House Republican Caucus that will do that. They will make sure to keep copies of, you know, because constituents are going to contact you all the time through your Facebook page for various issues, for assistance with different cases. And so, you know, if they're working on a case, a lot of members will start a case file and keep that correspondence in there.
And if you're going to be using social media in whatever form, I strongly recommend you talk to your respective caucus counsel in advance about this issue, because this is an uncharted territory for in all the states, and I think even at the federal level too. That's never really truly been defined. At least when it comes to Facebook, there's a difference on how members handle that issue as well too, because sometimes you'll see the conservative way to do it, which is having a Facebook page that is your campaign page, a Facebook page that is your state representative, state senator page, and then a Facebook page that is your personal page. That can be, you know, administratively, so, you know, something that you're like, that's way too many Facebook pages to maintain. So there's members who have one page. You do everything on their Facebook page. Nothing wrong with that. When you do that, just you're going to want to make sure you know the nuances to, like, you know, what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing, and, you know, and then the posting of communications and everything like that. But it's a very interesting and uncharted place that has been created by in the public records world. Well, in the Senate, we're going to obviously make sure we know what those records are first before they can inspect them, and that we've gone through them, because clearly we don't want somebody to go through records and find a bunch of Social Security numbers or, you know, information that would otherwise be confidential. People who come and inspect them are going to have the ability under the law to come in and look at those in a much more quicker fashion than the time period it takes for us to gather records and then send them to them. So some people might choose to do that. I've never had anybody in my time at the Senate say, I want to come in and inspect records. they usually want us to send them and typically email them records. But if they want to come in and inspect them, like you, we're going to go through those things first before you, before anybody comes in and looks at them.
So the the Columbus Dispatch likes to do this trick because the Ohio Supreme Court has said before that making someone wait as long as 24 hours to inspect a record, because there's actually different language in the statute for inspection. Ohio Supreme Court said more than 24 hours is too long for inspection. So the dispatch knows this, and they like to show up in person and see the records in person. And the Ohio Supreme Court has said that if it's electronic, you have to give them a computer terminal that has access to those records and for them to browse through it. So it has happened before many times in the House, and usually it's the dispatch. It hasn't been anyone else. So anyone who's a local member from Franklin County, you might get that at some point. So just be ready. So thanks.
Law has changed over
time.
The
law has changed. It's not quite as bad. Is it capped at what, $10,000 now?
Yeah, $10,000.
About $10,000 fine for the government office, which means, you know, the House or the Senate's going to pay at some point. We, you know, at the House, I know at the Senate as well, we train the staff very diligently to always take a very close look at everything coming in, because there's no magic words that need to be used for a public records request, and it can be written or over the phone. It could be oral. You know, someone could show up. So we train them very diligently to report to the caucus council, to all four councils, you know, this records request has happened, and we try to fulfill it as quickly as possible, and we always are over-communicate with the requesters to make sure they're aware that we're working on it, you know, working on the fulfillment, and making sure that everything is fulfilled as quickly as possible so that there's no, you know, there's no lawsuit filed because people are dragging their feet or they feel like they haven't gotten their records in a timely way.
We have a time.
I'm sorry, but our main purpose this morning was to get these ideas out there to you. We're going to have to cut this one off because our next speakers are here. These are short sessions this morning. You'll obviously form relationships with or get to know well your caucus counsel on this matter. So, and you can call them, you know, with any questions you have before you get here, right? For the four caucuses. So sorry about that, because I know there were a few more questions, but I'd like to thank very much our three presenters.